Morning. Today's daf and Shabbos is Dalet. We are towards the top of the Amud. We are beginning this morning at the two dots Kufa. Okay, as we now entered into the first parak of the Masechta, so we are discussing the Malach Avotza, and as I mentioned, it's going to be a week-long venture here in this first parak. When we get to about daf Tes, so we are going to leave the world of Avotza, but only to come back to it. Avotza is a topic which I don't have the stats for you, but it probably is the most discussed topic throughout Masechta Shabbos, even though there are 39 malachos, an ample opportunity to talk about the other 38 malachos, but there is a unique fascination that the Gemara has regarding the malach of Hotza. Why that would be, we suggest in the first daf, we quoted Tosos, in terms of why it is so, the Gemara is so uniquely focused, zoomed in onto the malach of Hotza. But that is the topic of discussion over the course of today. The first part of today's daf, however, we're going to take a break from Hotza'a, and we're going to revisit a question the Gemara asked on yesterday's daf. Yesterday, the Gemara was talking about a person who had his hand and was filled with whatever, food, and he took it out of his house. And so we have learned in yesterday's daf, and we learned back in the Mishnah, on the first daf of the Masechta, that when you take your hand and you bring it outside of the house, so the hand and you are not the same. Meaning you're standing in the Rishos Yachid and your hand is outside now, so your hand is not in the Rishos Yachid. How do I know that? Because the Gemara talks about how when the Ani who's standing on the outside takes from your hand and you're standing on the inside, he's not taking from Rishos Yachid. He only takes from Rishos Yachid when he goes interior to the house and takes from your hand that was interior to the house. But once your hand is outside of the house, so your hand is not considered part of the house. And so therefore your hand is not a Rishos Yachid. Okay. Now we also know your hand is not a Rishos Rabim. That's clear as well. You're standing in the Rishos Yachid just because your hand now went outside, your hand is not a Rishos Rabim. So we know what your hand is not. It's not a Rishos Yachid, not a Rishos Rabim. So the Gemara says, okay, so if it's not a Rishos Yachid, not a Rishos Rabim, so maybe it exists in this rabbinic middle ground, which is called the Karmelis. Karmelis is a term that we use at any time that the Chachamim want to give definition to an area that is not defined by the Torah. Torah only has two definitions, either Rishos Yachid or Rishos Rabim. So when you have an area that's undefined sometimes or most of the time, the Chachamim come along and give it definition, and that's what's called a Karmelis. And so maybe the Chachamim slap this status of Karmelis on your hand. How would that result? So now what it would mean is that you can't bring your hand back inside, because then you'd be transferring something from a Karmelis, which ironically, by the way, is your hand, which is connected to your body, but you'd be transferring from a Karmelis now back into a Rishos Yachid, and that would be Asa Midrabanan. That is the Gemara's question. In the course of asking that question, so one of the distinctions the Gemara made is a distinction to be made between Shogeg versus Mezid. I'm sorry, let's go back. A difference between before Shabbos or on Shabbos. Meaning, did you put your hand out before Shabbos or did you put your hand on Shabbos? I was right about the Shogeg Mezid, but it's not the correct context. Right, we're going to go back to the distinction of before Shabbos versus on Shabbos. Now, before Shabbos, so you put your hand out, so you didn't do anything. That wasn't an akira. That wasn't a halachically significant akira, as you didn't do anything on Shabbos per se. You're never going to get to the malach of Hotza, because Hotza requires that akira and anacha both be done on Shabbos. So it's not so under those circumstances. So then you'd be allowed to bring it back in. But if you took your hand out on Shabbos, so now that you did the Akira on Shabbos, so now maybe the Chachamim will say to you, okay, you're going to have to keep it out there for the rest of Shabbos. Now you talk about physical challenges. That is a tremendous physical challenge to leave your hand out there for the duration of Shabbos. And just imagine, if possible, where you put your hand out on Friday night, and now you're going to be sitting there in that position where your hand extended outside, and it's going to be left out there for the duration of Shabbos. The chances are you're not going to make it. The chances are is that you're going to put the item down. And so therefore, you'll be violating Nisa Daraisa. And the Gemara's suggestion was, hey, I got a great idea. Why don't you just bring your hand back? Now, I know you're violating Nisa Darabanan, but if you balance it out, it's better to violate Nisa Darabanan rather than to violate Nisa Daraisa. So the Gemara says, why don't we say that? And the Gemara says, oh, okay. You know what? That reminds me, says the Gemara, of the question of Rabbi Bar Abaye. The question of Rabbi Bar Abaye was, a person took bread and stuck the bread to an oven wall on Shabbos, and the bread isn't baked yet, so the malacha hasn't been violated yet, and now can he do Rediyah Sapas? What is Rediyah Sapas? We already introduced ourselves to this idea yesterday. Rediyah Sapas is a skill in which you're taking the bread off the wall of the oven. It's a chachma. That's the way Rashi described it yesterday, and so it's an Issur de Rabbanan to be Rodeh Sapas. It's a rabbinic prohibition. And so the question now is as follows. If I leave the bread on the wall, so then I'm going to be violating Isser D'oraisa of Bishul. If I allow for Rediyas Apas, although despite the fact that it is an Isser D'Rabbanan, but if I allow it, so that'll prevent me from violating the Isser D'oraisa. And Rabbi Abaye Abaye says, so what's better? So should we make an allowance for the violation of a rabbinic prohibition in order to save the person from a biblical prohibition? Or maybe not. Maybe, look, the rabbinic prohibition's in place, so we don't violate the Isser D'Rabbanan, even though it's going to result in an Isser D'Oraisa. This was the question of Rabbi Bar Abaye that we asked yesterday. The Gemara says the questions may be related. The Gemara says possibly not. The Gemara says as long as we raise the question of Rabbi Bar Abaye, so let's go back and let's reopen the case. Let's adjudicate it just a little bit, and that's going to be the beginning of today's daf. We are starting on Dalam and Aleph Gufa. The Gemara goes back by Rabbi Bar Abaye Hidvik Pasba Tanur. Hitiru lo lirdosa kodem shiyavu lidechi of chatas o lo hitiru. So the question now is exactly as we just laid it out. So are you allowed to perform this activity of Rediyas Apas? It is a rabbinic prohibition, but it will save you from the Malacha D'Oraisa. Just before we get to the Gemara's discussion, just something enjoyable to think about, and that is that the Gemara says that when you put the dough against the oven wall, you have not yet violated the Isser. When will come to the point of violation of Isser? It will come to the time when it's actually baked. So that means to say that even though you set the malacha in motion, you're not going to be violating the Isser until the malacha is actually performed. Now, if you think about it, let's put that against other malachos. Now, we haven't seen the 39 malachos yet, but I'm assuming that we have a basic knowledge of the 39 malachos. And here, I'm just going to look at the first one. What's the first malacha? Zoreya. Now, Zoreya is planting. Now, you're going to tell me that you're not going to be violating the malacha until the seed actually takes root and until something grows? That's not going to happen on Shabbos. That's going to happen sometime later. And so the idea that if I start the malacha in motion, so then I'm not violating it until I see it actually result and yield something. So the obvious conclusion is that you're going to have to make some distinction between the act of Zriya and the act of Bishul, or in this case, Afiya. And the act of Zriya, in other words, the Torah puts it as an act, meaning it's the act of planting, which the Torah forbids. When it comes to Afiya, so you have to say this. I mean, the Gemara is assuming this. When it comes to Afiya, it's not the act of baking, it's the result of baking, which is what the Torah prohibits. That is clearly what is behind the Gemara's assumption over here. So anyway, okay, fine. So what we have now is the question for Bibi by his question, violating the Isser D'Rabbanan in order to avoid the Isser D'Oraisa. Amli Rav Acha Bar Abaye L'Ravina Hechidami. So the Gemara says, well, can we just, first of all, sharpen our question? When the person put the dough against the wall of the oven, did he know it was Shabbos? Did he not know it was Shabbos? Was it Mazid? Was it Shogeg? Let us sharpen the question, and you'll see why the question is a little bit tricky to navigate. So let's say it's shogeg. So if it's shogeg, so consider what just happened over here. He put the dough on the oven wall on Shabbos, having totally forgotten it's Shabbos. So we're going to give now a heter for him to take it off. A heter, he's in a state of shogeg. He is not aware that it's Shabbos. So who are we being matir right now? He has right now currently no idea that it's Shabbos. He has no memory of that Shabbos because he's a shogeg. Okay. That's why we're trying to sharpen the question. The diuk you're making is an excellent diuk, but right now the Gemara is assuming that it's shogeg. But if it's shogeg, so who are we being matir? Okay, fine. We'll come back. So elalav di ahadervi itkar. So the Gemara says, okay. So what happened was is that after he forgot that it was Shabbos, put the dough against the wall of the oven, and then someone tapped him on the shoulder and said, today is Shabbos. So now he's no longer a shogeg. Mid-activity. What is the status of a carbon chatas when you remember in the middle of the activity? So this is a technical point, but it's a really important point, which is you're not going to be chayv a carbon chatas. So v'idgar mi mechayv, you're not chayv a carbon chatas, v'atanan. So the Mishnah, we're going to see the Mishnah later in Masechta. Kol chayv a chatas en chayav imashiu t'chilasam shigaga v'sofen shigaga. In order to be chayv a carbon chatas, so you must be in a state of shogeg from the beginning of the act to the end of the act. And again, when we're talking about Bishul, the beginning of the act is putting the dough against the wall oven. The end of the act is when it's actually baked. If someone reminds you somewhere in the middle that today is Shabbos, you're no longer in a state of shogeg. Now, that doesn't mean that what you did was now, it's not an intentional liability, but this is just a simple carbon chatas technicality. You're not going to be chayav a carbon chatas. Now, the reason why that's so important is because the question was, and this is what Phil pointed out, is that are you going to be chayav a carbon chatas, or should we allow you to take it off so you were not going to be chayav a carbon chatas? So, the Gemara says, so it can't be that someone reminds you in the middle. Ela b'mezid. So the Gemara says, well, okay. So it's talking about where the person did a b'mezid. So the person did a b'mezid. Now, consider over here that look who we're looking to save. Right? So interesting. Right? We're now trying to save somebody from violating an isser, even though he started the isser b'mezid. Now, one could make the argument, if he started the isser b'mezid, so look, we're interested in saving every Jew. But for the person who intentionally is violating the Shabbos, and now the Chachamim are going to waive a rabbinic prohibition for this person who got himself into that position because he did so b'mezid, so that's interesting. But the Gemara is actually suggesting it. But the Gemara says, but I'll tell you the problem. Yeah, but it doesn't fit in the words. Right? Rabbi Barabai's question was, can he violate the Isser Darabanan to save himself from a carbon chatas? And it doesn't say from an Isser Skila. Okay, so Amr Rav Shila Olam Shogeg. So Rav Shila says, okay, let's go back. Let's go back to our original position that it was a shogeg. Ulamani tiru la'achirim. And so the Gemara now sharpens the question. When the heter is given, who is the heter given to? It's given to somebody else. Meaning, let's paint the scene to illustrate. So Reuven is totally forgetful of the fact that this morning is Shabbos. So he made his dough and he took the dough and he put it against the wall of the oven. And now it starts baking. And Reuven now excuses himself. He goes to shul, right? Thinking it's a Tuesday morning. Okay. And so Reuven goes to shul. Now Shimon comes into the house and sees what just happened. And with the assumption that Reuven did this totally b'shogeg, so now is Shimon given an allowance to violate this Issa d'Rabbanan of Rediya Sapas in order to save Reuven from violating the Issa d'Araisa? Now, mind you, as I say Issa d'Araisa, it is an Issa d'Araisa b'shogeg. Not b'mezid, but still, violating Isser Shabbos b'shogeg still is an Isser, and it would require Karban Chatas, and by me violating the Isser Durabanan, I'm going to save him from bringing a Karban Chatas. Okay. So, Maskev La Rav Sheshes. So Rav Sheshes says, so now that we sharpen the question, so now it presents a new halachic reality, which is, I'm violating the Isser Durabanan, so that he is going to be saved from an Issa d'Araisa. Rav Sheshet asks incredibly, well, we don't allow that. I should violate an Issa d'Rabbanan, so he should be saved from Issa d'Araisa. We never say to one person, hey, you go ahead and you violate something, so that somebody else can gain halachically. That doesn't work. So, Ela Amar Ravashi, so the Gemara now is going to take us down a new course. The Gemara Tosos over here, really interesting Tosos, so just highlight it. Tosos, the Divrei Maskil V'chi Omrim Lo La'adam, so he notes that the Gemara in Erevin does give an actual case where there is an allowance for somebody to violate a quote-unquote minor Isser, so that somebody else doesn't violate a more serious Isser. See the Gemara in Erevin, see the beginning of Tosos where he cites the case, and Tosos has to now make a distinction between the Gemara over there and the Gemara over here, so there is there's a lot to discuss in terms of this topic of violating an Isser so that somebody else can be saved from a more serious Isser. Anyway, but coming back to our discussion now, so now Rav Sheshet says it glot. He's not wavering one bit. You can't violate any Isser, even though it's going to save somebody else from violating a more serious Isser. So Elam Rav Ashi Lolam Mezid. So Rav Ashi says, really, we're talking about Mezid. Ve'ema kodem she'avoli de'Isser skila. And in terms of the girsa, in terms of the nusach, okay, so we're going to play around with the nusach. So the nusach should now read, sheyavo lidei iser skila, not sheyavo lidei chiyuv chatas. Okay, that is Gemara's question. And again, I'll reiterate. It's really amazing that the Gemara is entertaining the idea that that person put the dough against the wall of the oven, b'mezid, on Shabbos, knowing full well with Shabbos, knowing full well that what he was doing. And now the Gemara is actually entertaining the idea, not concluding, but at least entertaining the idea that you can go ahead and violate Issa d'Rabbanan and save him from the skila, the chi of skila. Okay, rather amazing. Rav Acha b'Rei de Rav Amasan LaBehedja. I'm Rav Bibi Bar Abaye. He's Big Pas Betaner. Yitir Lo Lerdosa Kodem Shevo Lidei Isher Skila. And the Rav Acha, when he learns this Braisa, or it sounds more like a memra, but either way, when he learns it, he says Beferish. In other words, the issue is the person put it on the wall on the oven wall intentionally. B'mezid. And the question now is, can someone come along and take it off, or can he come along? Sorry. The question's on himself. Yeah. Can he come along now and take it off, violating the Issur Rabbanan, in order to save himself from the Issur Skila? And the Gemara, just all the Gemara did for the first Amud of today's daf, just sharpened the Gemara's question. Didn't really answer it. It's a question, a by the lo ifshita, but the Gemara just simply sharpened the Gemara's question.
He would do it himself anyway. If I have a choice between
I find myself making this comment all the time. The person who did something bemazed it. The idea that the Chachamim now are asking, well, are we going to constant him? Are we not going to constant him? In this case, should he be allowed to violate Issur Rabbanan? He just violated Shabbos Memezid. He's not going to really care at this point in time. Issur Rabbanan? Thank you. I'll take it off. In other words, it's strange. I understand it's a strange question for this particular circumstance where this person doesn't seem to regard halacha much.
Maybe the second person looks at it as a pikuach.
Yeah. Okay, good.
He's saving life of somebody.
Correct.
So, what was it?
Yeah, but at the same time, they're saving life. But when the person, I mean, Tosos, I want you to know, it's part of Tosos' discussion. When it's important to save somebody's life when he's interested in his own life. But if the person's not interested in his own life,
he's going to get skill and everything.
I understand that. But Tosos speaks about this idea. If the person's clearly not interested in his own regard, so I don't then have to do anything to help that person out. Okay, I'm not saying that so simplistically, but Tosos does entertain that idea. Pashanani is Yado. Okay, and let's now go back. We're going to ask a very simple question in our Mishnah, and based on that question, it will take us through the rest of today's daf. It'll go into tomorrow's daf. The question is predicated on the following assumption. As we already discussed, this is now day 3 of learning about the Malach of Hotzah. Hotzah requires Akira Hanacha. You have to pick an item up from a Rishos Yachid, and you have to bring it to the Rishos Rabim and put it down in the Rishos Harabim. Simple. As far as the Kirin Anacha is concerned, so you're picking it up from an area that's 4x4 Tfachim. Now, the Mishnah didn't say that. And we haven't seen that idea yet, but it's right now one of the new rules that we're going to be learning, which is Makum Dalad al Dalad. Right? And remember, on day 1, I quoted the Tosfos. Tosfos says, why start with Otsah? Because there's so many basic ideas that come out of it. And here we're learning now together a new idea, that it has to be that when I pick it up, it has to be off of an area of Makum Dalad al Dalad, and it has to be put down on an area of Makum Dalad al Dalad. Dalad al Dalad means Dal by Dal Tfachim. A Tefach is approximately 4 inches. So you're talking about somewhere between, or 3 to 4 inches. So it's about 16 inches. Okay? So it's got to be an area that is at least, I'm ballparking right now, just so we have an idea. It has to be an area that's at least 1 foot by 1 foot. Now, if it's the floor, obviously, so you're good. Right, the floor is obviously a big area. But if it's a table, it's got to be a significant area, surface area of the table. Otherwise, it's not an akira. Otherwise, it's not an anacha. Now, that's going to be the Gemara's question. It's interesting because the Gemara assumes we all knew this, which, okay, good. Like I've said many times, in order to learn Gemara, you have to know Gemara. Okay, and I know it gets a little bit cyclical, but, okay, the Gemara assumes that we know this. The Gemara is never going to cite a source of why this should be. Is he Tosos over here? Tosos habi inan akira v'nacha me'al makum dalin. So the Gemara, in the absence of the Gemara, giving a source, so the Rishonim are going to try to offer suggestions and sources in terms of where does this halacha come from. So Amar Rabbeinu Tam, de'ein regilus aniach achefes bepachas midalin. V'chein haya mistama b'mishkan. So Rabbeinu Tam speculates on the following. Well, you know, when people pick something up and put something down, so they want to put it on an area which is stable. That is what's called what Rabbeinu Tam describes as normal behavior. And so mistama, so ostensibly, that is what happened in the Mishkan, where they put on something which was at least a makam dalad dalad. So Rabbeinu Tam is throwing out what I would call a svara. Okay, svara pshuta. Oda Mari, right, another one of the Balei HaTosfos, ayet e ish mimkamo, that you can actually see it in the Pasuk. right? The drasha in terms of where the Malach of Otsal comes from. Ayat say Ishmim come over. Remember Tosos on the Amud Beis said there are actually two drashas, two psukim, in terms of where we learn the Malach of Otsal from. Right? Tosos, just reiterating the point of Tosos on Dav Beis, which is a really fundamental point. Because Otsal is a Malacha Gerua, it's this quote-unquote inferior Malacha, so therefore it needs a drasha. Other Malachas don't need a drasha. Hotzah needs a drasha. So one of the drashas is, Al Yetzei Ishmim Kamo. Mashma Dekainami Achefetz. Now, even though the Torah says Ish, but it's also going to the item as well. Klamar, Mim Kamo Shel Chefetz. We're talking about the resting area of a Chefetz. Darshin Be'erevin, Al Yetzei, Al Yotzi. I forgot the Pashtei Kara, Kayam Kamo Shel Adam, Dehainu, Dalet Amos. So we're talking about makom, we're talking about people, we're talking about an item as well. Now in terms of the makomu shel adam, so makomu shel adam is generally speaking four tfachim, right? That's how much surface area, so to say, you cover. I know it's some people more, some people less, but that's the basic idea. And since it's the same drasha that teaches us about a chayfetz, so it's also going to be an area of dalet al dalet. Okay, so either the Svar of Rabbeinu Tam or the Drasha of the Ri, right? But that's the halacha. It has to be a makam dalal dalit. With all that stated, with that short introduction, the question now of the Gemara is going to be obvious. All the cases of our Mishnah are dealing with what? Where I'm putting it into the hand. Now the hand is not a makam dalal dalit. In fact, the hand is all but one tefach, right? That's in fact the very linear definition of a tefach. It is the dimension of your hand. So it is not a makum dalal dalit. So how in the Mishnah are we talking about a kira nacha very comfortably, and meanwhile all we're talking about is putting in somebody's hand? Now I know you can argue that the hand is connected to the body, and so and maybe your body is a makum dalal dalit, so your hand is as well. So I'll tell you what, let's take that thought, let's hold it off to tomorrow. Okay. So and tomorrow we're going to come back and we're going to open up that possibility. But for now, and for the rest of today's daf, the Gemara is going to go over other possibilities. Again, I hear you, and I like that. Let's hold off till tomorrow. Okay, that's tomorrow's daf.
When you say it's like you eat an ant, it's it's a whole complete thing. So the hand is a complete thing.
I know, but I'm telling you, the Gemara is going to try and resolve this in other manners. So the hand being a makam chashuv is a wonderful idea. So we'll come back tomorrow. Okay, so am I chayev? So the Gemara says, so why should you be chayev? So it has to be on a makam dalal dalal, and your hand is not on a makam dalal dalal. So Amar Rabba Hamani Rabbi Kivahi. So the Gemara says, well, okay, so let's try a number of approaches. Let's start with the approach of Rabbi Akiva. Damar lo bina makam arbal arba. Rabbi Akiva is of the opinion that I don't need an area of 4x4. Where do we see this where Rabbi Akiva did not? Based on the following Mishnah. Mishnah is coming up later on. I told you later in the Masechta we're going to be reopening up the discussion of Otsah again. And there, the Mishnah, Azark Mishos Yachle, Rishos Yachle, Rishos Rab Me'emtza. So here I am standing in my house. Okay, or it doesn't have to be my house, it could be a yard, a fenced in area, it's a Rishos Yachid. And then there's a big street. And then right across the street, there's another house. And so what do? So I throw a ball from my yard into the yard across the street. So now what happened is that just it's very simple to imagine, to picture. So now this projectile is going from one Rishus Yachid to another Rishus Yachid through a Rishus Rabin. And now the question becomes, did you violate the Isser of Hotzah? Now, if you're really thinking hard about the question, how many times did you violate the Isser of Hotzah if the answer is going to be yes? Oh, good. So then the answer would sound like the answer is going to be twice, because it's one from the Rishus Yachid to the Rishus Rabim. For whatever reason, I know it didn't land in there was no bounce, right? It went all the way through, airborne all the way through. So one from Rishus Yachid to Rishus Rabim, and a second time from the Rishus Rabim to Rishus Yachid. The idea right now that we're only going to say that Yachayv once is curious. We're going to come back to that in just a moment. But in the meantime, however, this is the Gemara's discussion. And even before we dive into the discussion, I'll just make one other introductory point. And that is, remember, we already said this once before, but let's reiterate. Now, Rishus HaYachid has no halachic ceiling. Rishus HaYachid, Ola L'Rakia, just keeps going up. So when you're throwing the ball, or whatever projectile, but, I think this way. So whenever you're throwing the ball through Rishus HaYachid, so fine, so it's in Rishus HaYachid, regardless of height. But when you're throwing the ball through the Rishus HaRabim, so we are going to consistently say again and again, Rishus HaRabim has a halachic ceiling. And it's really low. It's only 10 tefachim high. So that means to say now that if you're throwing the ball above 10 tefachim, the Rishus HaRabim, it's not going through Rishus HaRabim. What is it? It's a makam patur. So makam patur, so that's not hotzah by anyone's definition. And now if you're throwing it below 10 tefachim, so then you're just talking about a line drive. I mean, that's a fastball. In other words, where 10 tefachim high is again about 3 feet high. So okay, fine. So with enough velocity, it could work. But just to picture this, we have to be talking about we're throwing it within 10 tefachim. The Gemara will entertain for a moment. Maybe we could be talking about above 10 tefachim, but let's hold off on that because the Gemara is going to entertain that a little bit later on. With all that stated, let's now go see this inside. So did Nana Zorik Mishus Yach Lirushus Yach Rishus Rabbim Mem So Rabbi Kiva Mechayv Chachamim Potrim. So we have a machlokes between Rabbi Kiva and the Chachamim. Rabbi Kiva says you're chayim, the Chachamim say you're potter. Rabbi Kiva Savar Amin and Kluta Kamishu and Chadamia. Because Rabbi Kiva subscribes to the following principle, and that is Kluta. The fact that it's in the airspace of the Rishus Rabbim, Kamishuhun Chadamia. It's as if it's now resting in the Rishus Rabbim. And so this principle of Kluta Kamisha Huncha, which is advanced by Rabbi Kiva, is now teaching us that I don't need it to rest on a mukum dalad al dalad. In fact, over here, if you're thinking about it, it's resting on right now nothing. By virtue of the fact that it's airspace, that's enough to be considered a hanacha. Now again, I know there is a overarching question that kind of is hovering above us. So why shouldn't there be both an akira and a hanacha? Okay, hold that thought. We're going to come back to that. Just give me a second. Rabbanan Savri Lomar Minan Kluta Kamisha and Chadamya. And the Chachamim don't subscribe to this rule. And so that means now, according to the Chachamim, it's just going to go from Rishos Yachid to Rishos Yachid. There was neither Akira nor a Hanacha in the Rishos Rabim. And so that means, according to the Chachamim, you're going to be Potter. Yes, question?
Kluta, what is the word Kluta?
Kluta literally means absorbed. Okay. So Lamamar Debshita Leila Rabba de Kluta Kamisha and Chadamya. Now that means that, according to Rabba, you're telling me that he clearly subscribes to the idea of Kluta, or let me say it better. According to Rabbah, that's how he understands Rabbi Akiva, uvetoch hasar pligi, and what they're arguing about is where you threw it within 10 tefachim of the halachic ceiling of the Rishus Rabbim. So vahami bai bai la Rabbah. The Gemara says, yeah, but when Rabbah addressed this Mishnah, Rabbah had the following question. He was unsure how to learn the Mishnah. The bai Rabbah asked the following question. Lematam yud pligi? So, one way to learn the Mishnah is the way we just did, which is that it's below 10 tefachim. Again, you threw the item from Rishus Yachid through the Rishus Rabim, and it went within 10 tefachim of the ground. And, uvaha pligi, the Rabbi Kiva Savre Kluta Kamishu and Chadamya, Rabban and Savre, Lormin Kluta Kamishu and Chadamya. And the debate between Rabbi Kiva and the Chachamim was whether we subscribe to this principle, as we just stated. That's one possibility. But if I threw it and the ball went above 10 tefachim, so then what is above 10 tefachim in a Rishus HaRabim? It's not a Rishus HaRabim. It is a makom patur. And so therefore, that is not going to be a malacha. And then the Gemara throws in a line and we don't learn out Zorik from Moshit. So let's just give a quick introduction over here so that we understand the Gemara's point over here and understand the context of our Gemara. There's a couple forms of the Malacha Votzah. Right? Malacha Votzah, again, is a very interesting Malacha, and the Gemara is fascinated with this topic, as we already pointed out in the beginning of Shir. Within the Malacha Votzah, so there are different ways to violate the Malacha. One, which is the one we're principally talking about, going from Rishus Yachid to Rishus Rabim, or the inverse, from Rishus Rabim to Rishus Yachid. Another way to do so is Dalad Amos Rishus Rabim, an area we haven't even touched yet. Another way to do so, which I would say is not popular, just simply because it's not discussed that much, but it is. It's a Mishnah coming up later on in our Masechta. And that is what's called being Moshit. Passing an item from one Rishus Yachid to another Rishus Yachid through a Rishus Rabim. Now, this is specifically passing. Okay? This is not throwing. In other words, this is a handoff. It's not a forward pass. So, And where does this come from? So the Gemara later on will talk about that we learned this from the Mishkan and the Krashim. What they did is that when they looked to move, so they disassembled the Mishkan, they took the beams and they put it on the wagons. There were four wagons in total. And what you did is you took the beams and you put it on one wagon, and then it was passed to another wagon in front of it. And so the assumptions are The wagons themselves are Rishus HaYachid. The area surrounding the wagons are Rishus HaRabim. You're passing, the wagons where you're situated on are above 10 Tfachim. And so when I'm passing a beam from one Rishus HaYachid to another through Rishus HaRabim, even though you're above 10 Tfachim, this is the malacha of being Moshit. Now, with that stated, so is there any way to learn one form of Otsah from another form of Otsah? That's the Gemara's point over here. The Gemara's point is that if I'm Zorek, if I throw something from a Rishus HaYachid to another Rishus HaYachid through an area of a Rishus HaRabim that's above 10 Tfachim. Now, if I would have passed it, that's Hoshata. That's a Malacha. But I threw it. And that's the Gemara's point. Lo Yalfin on Zorek Mi Moshe. These Hotsahs are not transferable. And it's each one of them has their own unique set of rules. And they don't transfer from one to the other. And that's the Gemara's point. Okay. O Dilma. All this is one way to learn the Machlokas, which, quite frankly, is the way we already are accustomed to. Or maybe, O Dilma, Lamalam Yud Pligi, Uvaha Pligi, the Rabbi Kiva Savar Yalfinan, Zorak Mimoshit, Rabban Savar Yalfinan, Zorak Mimoshit. Or maybe no. Maybe the entire debate between Rabbi Kiva and the Chachamim is when I pass it above 10 Tfachim. And what's the issue? The issue is, as we just articulated, whether or not we learn out the malacha of Hotzah from Moshit. Rabbi Kiva says we do. And the Chachamim say we don't. My time, Amrin, includes the Kemishon Chadamya. But if I threw it within 10 Tfachim, so maybe, says Rabbah, the way to learn the Machlokis is that under those circumstances, there's no debate. Both Rabbi Kiva and the Chachamim are going to agree that one would be Chayav for the Malacha of Hotzah. Why? Because they both subscribe to the principle of Kluta Kemishon Chadamya. So the Gemara says, if this is the right way to learn it, so then it's a technical problem, but it's still a problem. When the Gemara advances, oh, maybe it's the Sheet of Rabbi Akiva. It's not just the Sheet of Rabbi Akiva. Meaning, who subscribes to the principle of Kluta Kamisha Uncha? In the second approach, everybody subscribes to the principle of Kluta Kamisha Uncha Damya. So the Gemara says, Halokasha Basidi Baya Hadar Ifshut Tilei, Desavar Rabbi Akiva Kluta Kamisha Uncha Damya. So the Gemara says, okay, I know that Rabbi at one point in time entertained two possibilities, but eventually Rabbah came to the realization that there's really only one way to learn it. Which way? The way we originally presented it. That the machlokis is where I threw it below 10 tfachim, and the debate is whether or not we subscribe to Kluta or we don't subscribe to Kluta. Okay. Vidilma. And right. And above 10 tfachim, correct. And above 10 tfachim, nobody learns that Zorik Mimoshe. Correct. Vidilma hanachu de labaya kira baye. So the Gemara says, okay, look. I'm ready to yield the floor for half the point, but not for two halves. Meaning, in our Mishnah, you put it in a hand. You took it out of a hand. The Akira and the Hanacha does not require Makam Dal al Dalet. And I'll even give you that Rabbi Kiva over here doesn't require a Makam Dal al Dalet. But I'll only give it to you on one of the two. I'll only give it to you on Hanacha. But I won't give it to you on Akira. Why?
The logic is obviously, the other way. The thing is resting, and you pick it up. So you're doing something.
Right. So
when you put it down, I would say maybe you need to.
I also expended mental energy on what makes more sense to say. Right.
And
I don't have. I'll just go through the Gemara. I'll go through the. I hear you. I'm just going to go through the Gemara. So Vidilma, I love the discussion. Let's table the discussion right now. Let's just see the Gemara. The Gemara is going to have a clear approach to it. But I also interested me as well. Vidilma anachu de labaya akira baye. So the Gemara says, okay, by anach I don't need a makam dalad dalad, but for akira I do need. And the Gemara now is saying, now why should that be? Meaning, why the Gemara makes that distinction between Akira, which one does and which one doesn't? It's a really healthy discussion. But right now the Gemara isn't having much of that discussion. The Gemara says that if anything, for the Hanacha I don't need it, but for the Akira I do need it. How did the Gemara know that it's only one of the two that Rabbi Kiva is waving on? And Rashi says it's really simple. Because now we're going to go back to the point that I touched on earlier, but now we get to really sit on this point. And that is, when you threw the item from one Rishus HaYachid to another Rishus HaRachim through Rishus HaRabim, and Rabbi Kiva says you're Chayev. Chayev means you're Chayev how many times? One time over. Meaning that you violated Shabbos only how many times? One time. Now, why not two? Oh, so now let's put it all to place. Okay. And Rashi says, because I'm going to read the Rashi inside. Midik tani Rabbi Kiva mechayev aval akira bayim al gabe makam dalad midolo ketani Rabbi Kiva mechayev shtayim achas mishamotzav achas mishamachnasa. So you see over here that Rabbi Kiva says you're not chayev two. So that means that of the two akira and anacha, only one of them gets a pass on a makam dalad adalad. So therefore you violate the malacha one time, but not twice. Because right now the Gemara is assuming that Akira does need a makam dalad adalad. And even though we have the principle of kluta, but kluta won't get me a makam dalad adalad. And so therefore, you're not going to be chayiv on the second step of Akira Hanacha. You're only going to be chayiv on the first step, Akira Hanacha, from the Rishos Yachid to the Rishos Harabim. Okay. So the Gemara says, so even though we're good, but we're only solved for half of our problem. And that, of course, leaves us now to give another suggestion altogether. Elam Rav Yosef Hamani. So now here we are in round two of our discussion. Again, let's reset the question and let's give the answer. The question now reset is that the Mishnah taught us that if I put an item into somebody's hand that is considered a makam dala dalid, the hand is not a makam dala dalid. So how does that work? So we try to say, well, we're subscribing to Rabbi Kiva, who subscribes to the principle of Kluta Kamisha Uncha. So you see that according to Rabbi Kiva, we waive the requirement of Dala Adalin. But according to Rabbi Kiva, it's only waived on the Hanacha, not on the Akira. So it doesn't solve for our Mishnah. So now we are going to basically go with the same approach, but not Rabbi Kiva, new Tana. Elam Rabbi Yosef, Amani Rabbi He. So Rabbi Yosef says, it's the Tana of Rabbi, meaning Rabbi Huda Nasi. Hi Rabbi, Lema Rabbi, Detanya, maybe it's the following Rabbi. We learned in a Braisa. Zarak. V'nach agabe ziz kol shehu, Rabbi Mechai v'chacham in potrim. So again, this is a Mishnah coming up later on. If I throw something, it's a brisa, I'm sorry. But we're still going to see it later on. If I throw something and it lands on a protrusion. Now right now it's in a tremendously ambiguous reference, a protrusion. But it lands on a protrusion, that's a ziz. So Rabbi says, Mechai v'chachamim seyer potter. Now what exactly are the circumstances over there? Obviously, it must be a somewhat complex issue because we have a debate on what is the result. So the Gemara explains, Hasam kedabin lamemer lakaman. Well, before I get to the Gemara's next point, the Gemara right now is thinking the ziz is a protrusion, and what's the issue? It's a really small protrusion. In other words, it's not a makam dalad adalad. And Rabbi Kiva says you're chayiv. Sorry, let me update myself. Rabbi says you're chayiv, and the chachamim say you're pater. So the Gemara says, Hasam kedemin lamem lakam, and the Gemara says, yeah, but that's not the issue. In other words, the issue is not whether it is or is not a makam dala adalid. The issue is, So the Gemara says like this, the case over there, the Elan is in a private domain. The branch of the Elan is now going over the Rishus Yachid into a Rishus Rabim, and then what you did is you threw it into the branch, and it landed on the branch. Vizark v'nach anofo. Now you threw it on the branch. Is that branch now considered as still part of the Rishus Rabim because the branch right now physically is hovering over Rishus Rabim, or do we say no? The branch is really just still connected to the trunk. The base of the trunk is in the Rishus Yachid. The branch now is considered Rishus Yachid. And this is a classic question that the Gemara asks time and again in many different scenarios of basically how to look at a tree and its branches that are now over the border. But now we're asking the question from a halachic, from a Shabbos halachic perspective. Rebbe Savar Aminich Dinofo Basar Ikaro. Rebbe's of the opinion that the branch really follows the trunk. And the trunk now is in the Rishus Yachid. The branch is in the Rishus Yachid as well. And also, we're going to add one more important point. And that is that even though the branch is not a makam dala adalid, but because the branch is connected to the base of the tree and the base of the tree is clearly a makam dala adalid, so the branch now obtains a status also of a makam dala adalid. And Rabbanan Savri Lar Minish Dinofa Basar Ikaro. And the Chachamim say no. In other words, the branch does not gain the status of being a makam dala adalid, and so therefore, according to the Chachamim, you're going to be putter. Okay, and by the way, let's just make a quick observation over here, and that is that our entire discussion started with your hand and the question of whether your hand being a makam dala adalid. And now, again, I know we made this point earlier, but now is a good time to reiterate this point. Your hand is obviously connected to your body, and your body is obviously a makam dala adalid, so why can't your hand be as well as being a connection to the body? And we just learned together that regarding the branch and the tree, the branch on the tree, at least according to Rebbe, he's viewing it as the branch as an extension of the tree. And so what you can say, you don't have to say this, but you can say is that as far as the relationship between a branch and a tree, obviously it's static, obviously it's immobile. It's, you know, it's not an animate human being. So you could say you can more easily view that as one unified entity than a person with his hands, which are in constant motion. So Elad Tanya said, the Gemara says, okay, consider the following brisa zarak. Okay, this is going to be now the mirror image scenario that we described earlier. I'm standing in the Rishus Rabin. I throw an item through a Rishus Yachid. And then it lands, and it goes all the way through the Rishus Yachid. And then it comes out the other side. And so now, did you violate Shabbos? Rebbe Mechayev, the Chachamim Potrim. So Rebbe says, Rechayev, the Chachamim Seir Pater. Now, this is the flip of what we discussed earlier this morning. And within the flip, Amar of Yehuda, Amar of Shmuel, Amar of Yehuda Amar Shmuel Mechayev Haya Rebbe Shtayim Achas Mishem Motzah V'Achas Mishem Achnasa. Here's an important detail, and that is that Shmuel's understanding is that you're going to be Chayev two times over, one for the Malacha of Achnasa and one for the Malacha of Otzah. Right? Step one, you were standing in Rosh Hashanah Rabbim, you threw it through the house. Freeze that moment right there. So that is you were being Machnas. And we're assuming right now that the house is absorbing the item. It's as if it's resting in the house. It didn't land on the ground. Oh, okay, good. So according to Rebbe, we've waived the requirement of a makom dala dalet. Now it goes from the house to the outside. Okay, so now you see, and Shmuel taught us that Rebbe says you're chayv on both achnasa and the hotzah. So now we have seemingly a really good proof that according to Rebbe Yehuda Nasi, he waives the requirement of akira and anacha being a makom dala dalet. Alma, and the Gemara spells this out. Lo ba yakir v'lo hanacha, agabi makam dala adalit. So you don't need an akir and anacha and a makam dala adalit. So ha idmar la, Rav Shmuel, dami tarvayu. So the Gemara says, wait 1 second, that proof is not a good proof. Why? Lo mechai rebi ala b'rishus yachin mekureh. So the Gemara says, because even in that scenario, you didn't describe it properly. That's the scenario, yes, you threw it through rishus yachin. It wasn't a fenced-in yard. It was a house with a roof on top. Now, I know these concepts are going to sound similar to one another, but up until now, we discussed the idea of kluta kamisha huncha. The Gemara now says that if we're throwing it through a house, so a house is a more enclosed area. The house being a more enclosed area, the Gemara's terminology, which we're going to see in just a moment, its next line, is basic mandamalia. The house is viewed halachically as it's filled up. Meaning because now the house is closed in, not just walls, but with a roof overhead, so therefore we're going to view the house as basically a solid entity, halachically, a solid entity. So when I throw it through the house, obviously there's a window, right? So when I'm throwing it now through the window, and it goes in one side, and it comes out the other side, even if I don't subscribe to Kluta Kamisha Huncha Damya, and the house has a stronger halachic foothold, because since that has a roof over top, and since we say basic Kamandamalia Dami, so it's as if the item now has rested in the house. And it's as if it's standing on solid ground. And again, I know it's a halachic reality, but still, that's what the Gemara is assuming right now. So even as we are now learning this halacha together, it may not inform us anything about the requirement of dala adalad. Because dala adalad means I need to have something physically there that is a surface area of at least 4x4. And so the Gemara makes exactly this point. Ala b'rishos yachim mikura damin am basic amandamaya damin. Aval, she'ena makura, lo. But if it doesn't have a roof over top, and now we can't bank on the concept of basic command demalia, and now we only have helping us kluta kamishuncha, maybe under those circumstances, Rebbe doesn't subscribe to that. Aval, she'ena makura, lo. V'chitem achanami b'makura. So the Gemara says, well, maybe there's a roof in our scenario. Now, what the Gemara is suggesting is that there's a roof over the Rishus Yachin and the Rishus Arabim. To which the Gemara is going to say, what? There's no such thing as a Rishus Rabin with a roof. So, ha tenech b'Rishus Yachid Mekura. So the Gemara says, look, I'll grant you that a Rishus Yachid can have a roof. And in fact, most Rishus Yachids do have a roof on top of it. But Rishus Rabin Mekura Michayev. A Rishus Rabin that has a roof on top of it? Like, what are you talking about? The Amar of Shmuel Bar Yehuda, Amar Rebbe Abba, Amar Rav Huna, Amar Rav, Amavir Chefetz Dala Amos b'Rishus Rabin Mekura Pater. If it's a Rishus HaRabim with a roof overhead, that is not a Rishus HaRabim. One would be potter for making such a transfer. You're not the Chachamim don't favor that activity, but nevertheless, it's not a Rishus HaRabim. Lefi, just give me a second. Lefi she'eno dama ledigle midbar. Because that's not what the Rishus HaRabim look like in the midbar. Everything, all our definitions are precedented of what it looked like in the midbar. Rishus HaYachid is defined so because that's what was in the midbar. Rishus HaRabim is defined so because that was within the midbar. And since the midbar's Rishus HaRabim did not have a roof overhead, so that means that's part of the very definition of Rishus HaRabim. A Rishus HaRabim, by definition, does not have a roof overhead. So therefore, to use the principle of basic command Amalia Dame, we could use that in describing a Rishus HaYachid. There is no way we could use that in describing a Rishus HaRabim, because once the Rishus HaRabim has a roof, it doesn't define as a Rishus HaRabim. And so therefore, we are now, we just finished round two. And now, we're still stuck. Meaning, where are we right now in the Gemara? Looking for an answer to a very simple question. So, and it gives us an opportunity to just simply recap our daf. The first half of today's daf dealt with a question from Rabbi Bar Abaye, not related to the Malach of Otzah, but just simply because it came up in the course of discussion yesterday's daf. So the Gemara revisited it, and quite frankly, the only thing that we did in the Gemara, from the Gemara's perspective, is just sharpen the question. Right? Violating an Issur Darabanan to save a person from an Issur Daraisa. We were talking about Shogeg, we were talking about Mezid. Okay, that was the first half of today's daf. And the second half of today's daf, the Gemara had one simple objective. The Mishnah said that one violates the Issur Malach of Otzah by passing something to an Ani, or for the Ani to pass it to the Balabais that's in the house. And what are we doing? They're putting it into their hands. The hands is a small area. And it's not a makam dala dalin. And as one of the tenets of the Malach of Otzah, it has to be, akir and anach, have to be in a makam dala dalin. And the hand is not a makam dala dalin. And so over the course of today, we have now went through two attempts of suggesting that our Mishnah doesn't subscribe to this rule, that there's no requirement of a makam dala dalin. We see this by Rabbi Akiva in the example of throwing it from one Rishus HaYachid to another Rishus HaYachid with the Rishus HaRabim in the middle. Rabbi Kiva says, you're Chayiv. You see, you don't need a Makam Dalad Adalad. But to that, the Gemara says, I only see that on the Hanacha. I don't see that by the Akira. And we saw the Rashi earlier in terms of explaining how it's so clear. But it was clear. Then we suggested, well, maybe it's like Rabbi. Because Rabbi, in the mirror image, a scenario where I'm in one Rishus HaRabim and there's another Rishus HaRabim and I'm throwing it through a Rishus HaYachid, so Rebbe says you're chayiv, and we have a Kabbalah that Rebbe says you're chayiv shtayim, and even though it didn't rest in the house, so Rebbe waives the requirement of makam dala dalad both on the Akira and on the Anacha, and the Gemara dismisses this as well because the house is an area which is Makura. We're talking about where it has a roof on top. It's not subscribing to the rule of Kluta Kamisha Uncha. It's subscribing to a firmer rule, if you will, of basic command amalia. The house is considered like it's full. And so therefore, it rested in the house, halachically. And so that is, so the Rebbe does subscribe to the principle of that there is a makam dalad al dalad requirement. So where that leaves us off right now is setting us up for tomorrow, where tomorrow is going to give us the answer that it accepts in terms of how the hand becomes a makam dalad al dalad.